ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 9 चैप्टर 18 चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड किंग अयाति रिगेन्स हिज यूथ टेक्स्ट नंबर 28 एंड 29 विल द टेक्स्ट नंबर 28 तते अवस्थिते प्राह देवयानी मनोगतम् पित्रा दत्ता यतो यास्ये सानुगा यातु माम अनु। ट्रांसलेशन। After hearing Shukracharya's request, Vrishaparva agreed to fulfill Devayani's desire and he awaited her words. Devayani then expressed her desire as follows. Whenever I marry by the order of my father, my friend Sarmishta must go with me as my maid servant along with her friends. Anyway. Text number 29. I'll recite the verse. Pitra datta devayanyai sharmishta sanuga tada swanam tat sankatam vikshya tad artasya cha gauravam devayanim paryacharad stri sahasrena dasavat. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Vrishaparva wisely thought that Shukracharya's displeasure would bring danger and that his pleasure would bring material gain. Therefore, he carried out Shukracharya's order and served him like a slave. He gave his daughter Sarmishta to Devayani and Sarmishta served Devayani like a slave along with thousands of other women. Purport. In the beginning of these affairs concerning Sarmishta and Devayani, we saw that Sarmishta had many friends. Now these friends became maid servants of Devayani. When a girl married a Kshatriya king, it was customary for all her girlfriends to go with her to her husband's house. For instance, when Vasudev married Devaki, the mother of Krishna, he married all six of her sisters, and she also had many friends who accompanied her. He, a king, would maintain not only his wife, but also the many friends and maid servants of his wife. Some of these maid servants would become pregnant and give birth to children. Such children were accepted as Dasi Putra, the sons of the maid servants, and the king would maintain them. The female population is always greater than the male, but since a woman needs to be protected by a man, the king would maintain many girls who acted either as friends or as maid servants of the queen. In the history of Krishna's household life, we find that Krishna married 16,108 wives. These were not maid servants but direct queens, and Krishna expanded himself into 16,108 forms to maintain different establishments for each and every wife. This is not possible for ordinary men. Therefore, although the kings had to maintain many servants and wives, not all of them had different establishments. Maybe a mistake, I prepared for wrong words, but I'll try to speak whatever. So first I seek the blessings of the devotees before attempting to speak. So here we see this episode that Shukracharya when he came to know that his daughter was insulted by the daughter of Vrishaparva, that is Sarmishta. So then Shukracharya immediately comes to the house of Vrishaparva, who is also his disciple. Then Vrishaparva, understanding that Shukracharya is in an angry mood, that he may curse him because of the mistake committed by his daughter. So Vrishaparva immediately actually bows down to Shukracharya, and then he pacifies Shukracharya, and then Shukracharya is telling Vrishaparva to fulfill the desire of his daughter Devayani, because ultimately he came to Vrishaparva because his daughter was insulted and his daughter is in an angry mood. So he is telling Vrishaparva to fulfill the desire of his daughter. So here, in this translation, it said that Vrishaparva agreed to fulfill Devayani's desire, and he awaited her words. And Devayani expressed her desire by saying that Sarmishta must come with Devayani as her maid servant when she gets married to Yayati. So one lesson which I thought should be relevant is that here we see that Vrishaparva wants to actually, he pacified Shukracharya, and then he was ready to follow the order of Shukracharya, whatever it may be. So here actually the mistake was committed by Vrishaparva's daughter Sarmishta. Sarmishta was the one who actually threw Devayani into the well. But although the mistake was committed by his daughter, but Vrishaparva pacified Shukracharya as if he had committed the mistake. So this lesson we can learn is that when the subordinates commit some mistake, the master also master should take responsibility for the mistake committed by the subordinates. Because master is, he is actually responsible for training the subordinates so that the subordinates will act in a proper manner. The subordinates do not act properly, then master is also responsible for the mistake committed by the subordinate. So we see in the 6th canto of the Bhagavatam that when Yamaraj actually understood, when Yamaraj came to know that his messengers, the Yamadutas, they actually by mistake they went to arrest Ajamil, who was actually chanting the names of Lord Narayan at the time of death. Then at the end, Yamaraj actually begs forgiveness to Supreme Lord Rama, Supreme Lord Narayan. So there Yamaraj is saying that although my servants have surely committed a great offense by arresting a Vaishnava such as Ajamil, O Narayan, O Supreme and oldest person, please forgive us. Because of our ignorance, we failed to recognize Ajamil as a servant of your lordship, and thus we have certainly committed a great offense. So here Srila Prabhupada says that actually the mistake was committed. Yamaraj did not actually commit an offense, but the mistake was committed by the Yamadutas. But although the Yamadutas committed the mistake, they offended Ajamil, but still Yamaraj is actually taking responsibility, and he is actually begging forgiveness to the Supreme Lord on behalf of his subordinates. And also he feels that he has committed the mistake. So Srila Prabhupada says that in the Nyaya Shastra, it's mentioned that if a disciple or a servant commits a mistake, then the master is also responsible, and the master can also be punished. And we also see in another instance, in the 4th canto, when Lord Vishnu was instructing Prithu Maharaj. So Lord Vishnu tells to Prithu Maharaj, he tells about the duties of a king. So there Lord Vishnu tells that to give protection to the general mass of people, who are citizens of the state is a prescribed occupational duty for a king. But acting in that way, the king in his next life shares 1/6 of the result of pious activities of the citizens. So when a king, the duty of a king is to give proper protection to the citizens. And the wing, when the king gives protection to the citizens, he shares 1/6 of the pious credits of the citizens. But on the other hand, if the king does not give protection to the citizens, and if he simply levies taxes on the citizens, then he is actually, his own pious credits will be taken away by the citizens. And not only that, his own pious credits will be taken away by the citizens, but he will also have to suffer for the sinful activities committed by the citizens. He will have to share 1/6 of the sinful reactions which are committed by the citizens. So here we see that when a person becomes a king or a spiritual master or a father, he has a great responsibility to train the subordinates. And the subordinates, when he does not train, when the subordinates commits a mistake, then he also has to suffer for the mistakes committed by the subordinates. So Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport that the same principle can be applied to the parents and the spiritual masters as well. If the parents simply give birth to children, but they do not train the children, then they become responsible for the activities of their animalistic children. Lately, such children are turning into hippies. Similarly, if a spiritual master cannot train the disciple properly, and if the disciple commits a mistake, spiritual master also has to suffer for the sinful reactions which are committed by his disciple. So Prabhupada says that these subtle laws of nature are practically unknown to the general mass of unknown to the leaders of society. Actually, nowadays we see that people are eager to become leaders. In one lecture, Solas Radhanath Maharaj was saying, if a prime minister, a president, or a chief minister, if they actually know what it means to be a chief minister or a prime minister, then nobody will be eager to become a prime minister or a chief minister. Because if they actually know that, if they actually come to know that, if the citizens do not act properly, then they have to suffer for the sinful reaction of the citizens. If they actually know what all sufferings they have to undergo, then they would not be actually eager to become leaders. So that is why, but nowadays we see that people are eager to become minister, chief minister, president. They do not know these subtle laws of nature. The subtle laws say that how the master is responsible for the mistakes committed by the citizens, and they are supposed to train the subordinates. And the same is true in the opposite way also. That when a subordinate or a servant is acting on behalf of the master, if he commits a mistake, he must know that actually that his master will be blamed for the mistake committed by the subordinate. So the subordinate has to be well versed, he should be well versed with the mission of the master. He should be well versed with what is the mood of the master, how he is supposed to represent the master. So again, this lesson also comes in the sixth canto, when Vishnudutas meet the Yamadutas. Vishnudutas ask the question to Yamadutas. They ask that Yuyam vai dharma rajasya yadi nirdesha karina bruta dharmasya nastatvam yachcha dharmasya lakshanam. Vishnudutas are saying, if you are actually the messengers of Yamaraj, you must explain to us what are the principles of religion and what are the symptoms of irreligion. So Srila Prabhupada says, because his Yamadutas, they have come to take away the soul of Ajamil. But because Ajamil chanted the holy names of Lord Narayan, Vishnudutas have come to take Ajamil to Vaikuntha planet. They came to save Ajamil. But then, so Yamadutas are obstructing in their duty. So Vishnudutas are telling Yamadutas that you claim to be the messengers of Yamaraj, who is actually the personified religion, Dharma personified. So if you are actually the messengers of Yamaraj, then you must explain to us what is the principles of religion and what are the symptoms of religion. So Srila Prabhupada says that one who represents someone must fully know that person's mission. The devotees in the Krishna consciousness movement must therefore be fully aware of the mission of Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. Otherwise, they will be considered fools. So it is important that when a person is representing a particular mission, when a person is representing a master, he must know the mission of the master. Because, like when devotees go out, like outside people, they see that, oh, these are actually Hare Krishna devotees. They are actually practicing Krishna consciousness. They are reading Bhagavad Gita. So they expect the devotees to know that, they expect that devotees are conversant with the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita, conversant with the mission, with the teachings of Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada. So that is why it is very important that devotees actually should read Srila Prabhupada's books. So that is actually emphasized in this purport of Srila Prabhupada. And I thought, like sometimes one may say that, I'm not a preacher, so I'm not expected to read Srila Prabhupada's books. Maybe somebody is a preacher, and he's actually representing the mission of Lord Chaitanya. He is supposed to be well conversant with the books of Srila Prabhupada. Maybe I'm not supposed to read. But then, even if somebody is not a preacher, but still one should read Srila Prabhupada's books, because Srila Prabhupada has spent so much of his time and energy to write these books. So in order to at least show our gratitude to Srila Prabhupada, one should read his books. Usually when a person puts so much of energy into something, and when he sees that somebody is not reciprocating with his efforts, then he actually definitely feels hurt in his heart. Like I remember, like for example, suppose in your house, you are inviting some guests. So you are preparing an elaborate feast in order to serve the guest. You are preparing, say, some 5 varieties of sabjis and 3 varieties of sweets and pakodas and juices, and puris and so many things. And then the guests come. But then the guests come and say that, actually we are not feeling hungry at all, we are so full. So please give some fruits, or please give some uncut fruits, or otherwise, please give some juices. So we can't, our stomach is so full, we can't eat anything. They say like that, the people who have prepared the feast, they will be like hurt very much, because they must have spent like so many hours preparing the feast, expecting that they can serve the guests properly. And finally, when the guests come and say that we are actually not at all hungry, please just give me some fruits, then they'll feel that, they'll feel deeply hurt. I remember, like sometimes when devotees, especially senior devotees, when they go to some devotee's house for prasadam, they especially take some younger devotees along with them. because they don't have the capacity to eat so much. And they know that like the host, they want to serve the guests so nicely. And we can't definitely reciprocate with their desire to serve. So then they would say, okay, when the host want to serve the guest, they would say, okay, I can't take, but this devotee will take. So at least. So basically, the point is, the principle is that, like when a person puts so much of his energy into something, and when he sees that somebody is not reciprocating with that properly, then he feels definitely hurt. So even if you feel that I'm not a preacher, I'm not supposed to know the mission of the master, but we know that Srila Prabhupada has actually put so much of his energy into writing his books. He has spent so much of sleepless nights to write these books. So that is why, and he wants his devotees to read his books. Srila Prabhupada writes in the Nectar of Devotion preface that this book is especially meant for the devotees who are now engaged in the Krishna consciousness movement. It applies to all the books written by Srila Prabhupada. But especially Srila Prabhupada wants his devotees to read his books. So that is why in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Vidura tells to Maitreya Rishi, Ekanta labam vachasonu pumsam sushloka mauler gunavada mahu shrutescha vidbadvir upakritayam katasudayam upasamprayogam. Vidura is saying, the highest perfectional gain of humanity can be achieved simply by discussing the activities of the pious actor, Sushloka Maule. And such activities and pastimes of the Supreme Lord, who is called as the Supreme Pious Actor, they are very carefully written down by the great sages in the Vedic scriptures. So the actual purpose of the ear is served by keeping the ear near those pastimes of the Supreme Lord. So especially, well, there are many lessons to learn from this verse, but especially it is mentioned that such activities of the Lord, such pastimes of the Lord, they are written down by the sages very carefully. That means like these books written by all these books which are given by the acharyas, they are given by those acharyas with great effort. They have taken out so much of time, and with great care and attention they have written these books. So even if a person thinks that I don't have to read these books because I'm not a preacher, but at least to show our gratitude to Srila Prabhupada, in order to reciprocate with his efforts, one should actually read these books. And another reason, I remember few years back, when I was serving in the Sevastan, I happened to hear news, but because it is related to this, one can learn the lesson from that. But some devotees were going to some doctor, and then the devotees were saying that it seems that this doctor is not so inspired to give medicines to the devotees. And then later, so they were saying that, why is this doctor not paying so much attention to treating the people, like that they were saying. Because the doctor is a very good devotee, there's no mistake on his part. But we can learn the lesson. So later we came to know that previously, when the doctor was giving some medicines to the devotees, somehow he happened to see that some medicines were lying in the dustbin, which were given by him. So maybe the devotees, there was some mistake with the medicine, or it's not working. I don't say that the mistake is the devotees or the doctor. You can understand the lesson. So then when the doctor saw that the medicines which were given by him, they were lying in the dustbin. So after that incident, the doctor was not at all, he was not feeling inspired to give medicines to the devotees, because he felt that I spent so much of time and energy and I was giving these medicines for free, but they actually threw the medicines in the dustbin. So he felt a little hurt. Then after that he was not feeling inspired to give medicines. So I was thinking, like if an ordinary, if a doctor who is must have given some medicine for say cold, cough or some disease related with the body. So when he sees that the person is not reciprocating with the medicine given by him, he feels hurt, and after that he is not inclined to give medicines. So these medicines are related with the body. But the these medicines are for the disease of the body. But then what is actually the greatest disease? The Prachetas in their prayer, they say that Vayam tu sakshat Bhagavan bhavasya priyasya sakyur kshana sangamena sudishchukit sasya priyasya sakyur bishaktamam tvadya gatim gatasma. Prachetas are saying to Lord Vishnu that we have got your association because we had the association of Lord Shiva. Because of the blessings from Lord Shiva, we have got your association. And then they say that you are actually the supreme most physician. Bishaktamam. Bishak means physician. Bishaktama means the greatest physician. You are the greatest physician because only you can cure the greatest disease or the most or the disease which cannot be cured by anybody. Sudish chikitsyasya. Chikitsyasya means to cure. Sudish chikitsyasya means very difficult to cure. What is the disease which is very difficult to cure? That is the disease of bhavarog. The disease of material existence. And what is the medicine for the disease of the material existence? The glories and the hearing the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. Nivritta tarshay rupagiya manad bhavau shada shrotra manobi rama. The activities and pastimes of the Lord, they are actually the medicine for the disease of bhavarog. So when the suppose a doctor has found a medicine for the disease of AIDS or a cancer, and suppose he is giving that medicine to the AIDS patient or cancer patient. And when the cancer patient or AIDS patient, if he just throws the medicine, he's not taking the medicine, how will the doctor feel hurt? Because from the materialistic point of view, the disease which is incurable is like AIDS or cancer. And when a person gets that medicine, if he's not taking the medicine, doctor will feel very much hurt. But the greatest disease is the disease of bhavarog. And the medicine for the disease is the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. And they are actually given by the acharyas like Srila Prabhupada, who has actually carefully written these pastimes in his books. And when he sees that the devotees or the people are not reading these books, then actually they will feel greatly hurt. Just like when the doctor feels that patients are actually not taking the medicine, doctor will feel greatly hurt. But when the devotee sees that when the acharya sees the devotees are not reading the books, then he will feel actually much more hurt, because he understands the significance of the disease. So that is another reason that why one should read Srila Prabhupada's books. And another lesson which we may learn from this particular verse is that we see, maybe I'll read something related to the purport. Especially in the purport, Prabhupada talks about that how when Devayani wanted that Sharmishta should come along with her as a maid servant when she actually goes to Yayati. So Prabhupada says that in the Vedic culture, when a girl would get married to a Kshatriya, that she would be accompanied by many maid servants. And the king is supposed to maintain not only the wife but also all the maid servants who accompany her wife. And then Prabhupada says that sometimes a king would give birth to some children through the maid servants. And then he says that even when Lord Krishna married 16,108 queens, they were not actually maid servants, but they were all actually Krishna's wives. So basically Prabhupada addresses the point that sometimes when a person hears these principles being followed in the Vedic culture, that how a Kshatriya is allowed to marry so many people, sometimes a person may imitate and then they may say that, okay, I can also marry so many wives. So this is actually, this is one of the diseases of conditioned soul, that it tries to imitate a great person without understanding that he is not actually not qualified for that. When Lord Krishna married 16,108 queens, Krishna actually constructed separate palaces for the 16,108 queens. And Krishna was present with all the queens. Krishna expanded into 16,108 forms, and Krishna personally reciprocated with all of them. But we cannot actually, an ordinary conditioned soul cannot do that. So that is why one should not actually imitate a great soul. Like this also mentioned in another place in the fifth canto. The fifth canto, when at the conclusion of the Bharat Maharaj's pastime, when Shukadeva Goswami narrates the glories of Bharat Maharaj, Shukadeva Goswami says, this Bharat Maharaj, he talks about the renunciation of Bharat Maharaj. He says that Bharat Maharaj left his kingdom, his wife, his children, his sovereignty over the whole planet Earth. He renounced everything just like a person would leave after passing stool. When a person passes stool, like, he does not, like stool comes from his own body. Then after passing stool, he goes away, he does not see that, he does not think that maybe I left something useful from the body. He does not turn back and see that, oh, we left something useful, I should go and take it back. He doesn't think like that. So Bharat Maharaj, like when he renounced all these things, he felt in the same way. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes in the purport that when a person passes stool, he says that by passing stool, one experiences happiness. Because in fact, Srila Prabhupada said there are 2.5 pleasures in the material world. One pleasure is in passing stool, another pleasure is in passing urine, and rest everything comes in the next half. So definitely when a person passes stool, a person experiences pleasure. So he says that finally Bharat Maharaj experienced pleasure by renouncing all these things. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that by not passing stool, a person actually experiences some suffering. So similarly, Bharat Maharaj was experiencing some suffering, but not when he was having all these opulences. And then he says, the third characteristic is that when a person passes stool, then he does not feel that I have given up something useful. He does not turn back and get attracted to the stool which he gave up. So similarly, Bharat Maharaj's renunciation is the highest category because he did not turn back and see that he gave up something useful. So usually, when a sadhaka, when he gives up something, when he takes to Krishna consciousness, he gives up some previous habits, like before coming to Krishna consciousness, like for example, like, like you are watching cricket matches, or watching movies, or some other habits. But after coming to Krishna consciousness, like, you are forced to give up these things. But then, at least I was thinking, like when the final was going on, so, like, maybe he was thinking, oh, I am missing the watching match. So when a sadhaka gives up something, like because we don't have the higher taste, we feel that maybe I gave up something which actually gives pleasure. So that is because we have not developed a higher taste. We feel that we gave up something useful which can actually give pleasure. But in the case of Bharat Maharaj, his renunciation was not like that. That he did not turn back to see that maybe I gave something useful. Because he was completely disgusted. Like when a person passes stool, he is completely disgusted with stool. He does not turn back. Similarly, Bharat Maharaj, he was completely disgusted with all those opulences. So that is why, that is possible only when a person is actually attached. This kind of renunciation is possible only when a person becomes completely attached to the name, form and pastimes of the Supreme Lord. So then, Shukadev Goswami speaks a particular verse which is actually relevant to this particular purport. So Shukadev Goswami says, so therefore one should not imitate the activities of Bharat Maharaj. One should not imitate the renunciation of Bharat Maharaj. In fact, he says that one should not even imagine in his mind trying to imitate the activities of Bharat Maharaj. Says, what to speak of imitating in the physical platform, one should not try to imitate even in the mind. So here we see that although Krishna married 1608 queens, a conditioned soul usually tries to imitate. Or when he hears that previously many Kshatriyas married so many queens, so one may try to imitate, but then one has to understand what is his own situation. That's why Krishna says in the Gita, Shreyan Swadharmo Viguna Paradharma Sunishtitan Swadharme Nidhanam Shreya Paradharmo Bayavaha. That better to execute one's own occupational duty imperfectly instead of trying to execute another's duty perfectly. So then, like expanding on the same theme, that like Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport, that how Krishna married 16,108 queens, so one may think that Krishna is actually a person who is very much attached to women. He wants to enjoy with so many women, that is why he married so many queens. So usually a person tries to understand a great personality by trying to see the external behavior. But actually Krishna was reciprocating with the devotion of the 16,108 queens. So many times we try to judge a particular person without trying to understand the greatness of a person. Sometimes we consider an ordinary person as a great person, or sometimes we consider a great person to be an ordinary person. Like sometimes people consider Krishna to be when people like to worship Lord Ram, they don't like to worship Krishna because Krishna married 16,108 queens, or Krishna performed Ras Leela. So the people have their own parameters for judging a greatness of a person. So we have to actually understand who is actually a great person, who is actually an advanced devotee. Like speaking on this theme, like in living with a devotee, sometimes we may consider a person who is not very much advanced to be a great devotee, or sometimes we may understand a person who is actually advanced to be an ordinary devotee. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, in his Madhurya Kadambini, he speaks about the symptoms of a person in Nishta. So there are different stages in the progress of devotional service. So one of the stages, Nishta or steadiness. The first stage is Shraddha, faith, but Nishta means firm faith. So he actually describes the symptoms of a person in Nishta. So although, at least I'm not in the platform of Nishta, but at least we can understand, it is important to understand this, because when we consider a great person to be an ordinary person, we may actually commit offenses to the great person, and that will actually lead to degradation of our spiritual life. Or sometimes when we understand an ordinary person to be a great person, then also we may commit some mistakes. So we have to understand who is actually an advanced devotee. So he describes the characteristics. First he says, Nishtha means, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that after the initial awakening of pure faith, the next major development in the journey of a sadhaka is Nishtha or firm faith. And it is said that pure faith is the minimum currency by which a person gets the privilege to chant the holy names of the Lord. In order to chant the holy names of the Lord, one has to have that minimum faith. So that is Shraddha. But Nishtha is the currency which is by which a person purchases to chant the holy name related to Krishna's form. So when a person chants the holy name in the stage of Nishtha, he also perceives Krishna's form. So then he says, what are the characteristics of a person in the stage of Nishtha? So there are two characteristics. The one is the primary characteristics and the second is the secondary characteristics. The primary characteristic is consistency of the devotee's act of devotion. A person is consistent in his discharge of devotional service. So in this, coming to this point, the consistency or steadiness in the discharge, a person is steady in his practice of devotional service. But then this steadiness also develops in different levels. First, a person develops steadiness in activities which involve body, which involve the karmendriyas, the gross senses or the gross body. And when a person further advances, a person develops steadiness in activities which involve gyanendriyas or the subtle senses. And when a person further advances, a person develops steadiness in his mind, which is the subtlest of all the sense. This is consistent with Krishna's teaching in the Bhagavad Gita. In the third chapter of the Gita, Krishna says that Indriyani Paranyahur. Next line. Indriyabhya Paramana. He says that the mind is superior to the senses, intelligence is superior to the mind, the soul is superior to the intelligence. So first, a person develops steadiness in the activities of the gross body, then a person develops steadiness in the activities of subtle body, subtle senses. Like for example, there is a very nice verse in the fourth canto. I'll just take a few minutes because I was very inspired by the section, so I want to share this. So there is a very nice verse in the fourth canto. I'll first read this verse. This verse, not only the meaning is actually important, but there is a great significance in actually who is actually speaking this verse. So this verse, I will just first read the translation. My dear Lord, I therefore do not wish to have the benediction of merging into your existence, a benediction in which there is no existence of the nectarian beverage of your lotus feet. I want the benediction of at least 1,000,000 years, for thus I may be able to hear about the glories of your lotus feet from the mouths of your pure devotees. So this is a prayer offered by Prithu Maharaj to Lord Vishnu. So Prithu Maharaj is saying that I don't want liberation, but actually because in liberation I cannot taste the nectarian beverage of your lotus feet. Because when a person gets liberated, impersonal liberation, there is no chance of, because he does not have the personal body and senses, he cannot discharge devotional service. He cannot hear the pastimes of the Lord, he cannot chant the holy names. So I don't want liberation. But He says, but instead I want 1 million years, so that I can hear your pastimes. So this shows the eagerness of Prithu Maharaj to hear the glories of the Lord. So I read a nice quote which says that wisdom is not simply in the words, but wisdom also implies who speaks it and when he speaks it and where he speaks it. Wisdom is not simply the words, but it is also important who speaks it. Like suppose a poor person says that even if you have 1 crore rupees, you won't get happiness. Now people will think that morality is lack of opportunity. He is not having money, but then he says, oh, even if you have so much of money, there is no happiness. People will not take that statement seriously. But if a billionaire says that even if I have so much of money, even if a person has 1 billion, one cannot get happiness simply by money, then a person will think that means he'll take that statement seriously, because he has so much of money, but then still he's saying that we cannot get happiness by money, then people will take it seriously. So similarly, the very fact that Prithu Maharaj is speaking this verse is actually important. Who is actually Prithu Maharaj? So Rupa Goswami says in the Nectar of Devotion, after he describes the 64 Angas of Sadhana Bhakti, and especially he says different personalities who perfected their devotional service, who perfected their life by performing different activities of devotional service. He says that Parishit Maharaj perfected his life by hearing. Shukdev Goswami perfected his life by glorifying. But then he says, Prithu Maharaj perfected his life by worshipping the deity forms of the Lord. So Prithu Maharaj, he perfected his life by deity worship. That means he is the person who must be having great attachment to deity worship. So he is offering this prayer that I want millions of years. So why does he actually offer that prayer? Because he feels that there is so much of Krishna Katha which is taking place in so many places. I don't want to miss any of the Krishna Katha which is happening in so many places. So I want millions of years so that I can hear all those Krishna Katha which is taking place in so many places. So this actually tells an important point, that Prithu Maharaj is not simply attached to the act of worshipping the deity, but is actually attached to the person whom he is worshipping. Because when a person is attached more to the activity and less to the person, he only feels regret that when he misses the chance to worship the deities, but he does not feel regret when he misses the chance to hear the glories of the Lord. But on the other hand, when a person is attached to the person whom he is worshipping, he'll not only feel regret, oh, I missed a chance to serve the deity form of the Lord, but he'll also feel in the same intensity that, oh, I missed a chance to hear the glories of the Lord. So being attached to the act of worshipping the deity, that is definitely great. That is steadiness in those activities which involve the gross senses. But in order to be steady in hearing the glories of the Lord, because hearing the glories of the Lord involves subtle senses. It is like suppose when a person is very much tired, he may only be able to do deity worship. But then when we are, at least I am speaking for myself, but when I am tired, when I sit in the class, I cannot focus my attention. Usually I go to sleep. So we see that, so that means steadiness in those activities which involve subtle senses, if somebody is steady in those activities which involve subtle senses, that means he is in a more advanced stage. So one is steady in those activities which involve the gross senses. Steady in, suppose certain services, but then higher than that is steady in those activities which involve subtle senses. But highest is steadiness in the mind. Like sometimes, like we are sitting in one place and chanting us. Sometimes we may be apparently attentively hearing Krishna Katha, but then our mind is somewhere else. So our mind is not focused there. So highest is steadiness in mind. So that is why the primary characteristic of a person in Nishta is steadiness in the acts of devotional service, and that is also in different levels. First is, a person is steady in those activities which involve gross senses. But higher than that is steadiness in those activities which involve subtle senses. Highest is steadiness in those activities which involve the mind. So sometimes when you are on the gross platform, we may not be able to appreciate certain devotees who may be steady in hearing and chanting. Like in the Krishna says in the second chapter of the Gita, Yamimam Pushpitam Vacham Pravadantyavi Paschitaha Vedavada Ratha Partha Nanyat Asthiti Vadina. Krishna says that those who are attached to the flowery language of the Vedas, they think that this is the all in all. There is nothing higher than this. And when we ask them that what about the Upanishad section, what about the Vedanta Upanishad section which mentions so much of philosophy, they will say that like the section of the Upanishads, they are actually secondary. Only this Karmakanda section is the primary. The reason they will say is that because Karmakanda section, they talk about so many activities, you perform this ritual, this you follow these rules and regulation. But the Upanishad section, they mainly talk about philosophy. So they say that Karmakanda section is superior to the Upanishad section. So usually, like when a person is on the like grass platform, he may not be able to appreciate somebody who may be advanced in the subtle platform. Just like these people who are attached to the Karmakanda section, they are not able to appreciate the Upanishad section, which is actually considered to be the Vedanta, the conclusion of the Vedas. And like even sometimes we see that, like even in medical sciences, some school of medicine is, they are more on the grass level, like allopathy is on the grass level. But there are certain school of medicine which may be on the subtle level. Like both are bona fide, but I'm saying that. But somebody who is actually trained in the grass school of medicine, sometimes he may not be able to appreciate certain medical science which are actually in the subtle level. They'll think, oh, Ayurveda, it will not work, they will not be able to have faith. But they have different parameters. Like although all the tests may be perfectly correct, but still a person may be having problem. But whereas sometimes in the Ayurvedic school, he will not do any tests on the patient, but he will be able to understand, okay, you are having this problem, which may not be difficult, which may not be detected by the tests which are conducted on the grass platform. So then the secondary characteristic of a person in the stage of Nishta is consistency with which the qualities favorable to devotion, consistency with which a person exhibits the qualities favorable to devotion, like humility, tolerance, kindness to others, etc. So sometimes we see certain people may exhibit these qualities like humility, tolerance, they may be soft-spoken, but they may not be consistent in the activities of devotional service. They may not be strict in their sadhana. But that usually, sometimes materialistic people are a neophyte devotee. So they may think those people who are having this kind of qualities, but who may not have this, who may not be consistent in their sadhana, who may not have consistent in their devotional practices to be more advanced because they are having this soft-spoken nature or humility, tolerance, which are actually coming from their past good karma, not because they are spiritually advanced. So because of that, sometimes a materialistic person or a neophyte devotee considers a person who is actually less advanced to be a great devotee because he is exhibiting these qualities, he is consistently exhibiting this quality, but he is not consistent in his devotional practices. Or sometimes one may consider an advanced devotee who may be strict in his sadhana, but who may lack Vaishnava etiquette, who may lack Vaishnava culture, to be less advanced. Like sometimes a person may be very strict in sadhana, but sometimes we think like he may act in a particular way, he may laugh in a particular way, or he may dance in a particular way. Because of that, we may consider, why is he doing like that? We don't see that this person is like very consistent in his sadhana. He is very steady in his devotional practice. So this is a anartha of a materialistic person or even a neophyte devotee who doesn't see the primary characteristic of a person, that is steadiness in the activities of devotion. Instead of seeing that, he sees the secondary characteristics. When he sees the secondary characteristics are not absent or absent, he considers that person to be less advanced. Or sometimes he sees a person who may be lacking this who may not be consistent in the exhibition of these qualities, but who may be consistent in the devotional practices. Instead of seeing that, we may consider a less advanced to be an odd great devotee. Like, I'll conclude with this one particular purport given by Srila Prabhupada. In the fourth canto, when Prithu Maharaj meets the four Kumaras, so Prithu Maharaj says, Swagatam vo Dvijasreshta. Prithu Maharaj is welcoming the four Kumaras. You are the best of the Brahmanas, you are the best of the Vaishnavas. And he says that you have observed the vow of celibacy right from your birth. So Prabhupada is saying, Prithu Maharaj is greatly appreciating, glorifying the four Kumaras. Because four Kumaras, they observed the vow of celibacy right from their birth. It is actually very difficult. It's like one devotee was saying, the next most difficult thing after going back to Godhead is to practice Brahmacharya throughout the life. So Prithu Maharaj is appreciating the four Kumaras for observing the vow of celibacy. But then Prabhupada says, but Prithu Maharaj expressed his great appreciation for the four Kumaras being the devotees of the Lord. Prithu Maharaj expressed his appreciation for them being the for them observing this vow of celibacy, but he expressed his great appreciation for them being the devotees of the Lord. That means Prithu Maharaj is giving more emphasis to the primary characteristics instead of the secondary characteristic. And finally, like sometimes, so this is important in regard to when we see other devotees. But then sometimes one may take inspiration from this and may say that, okay, I am steady in the activities of devotion. So even if I don't develop these Vaishnava qualities, even if I don't observe Vaishnava etiquette, or even if I don't observe proper behavior, it is all right. Because I am steady in my devotional practices, I am steadily doing my sadhana, I am steadily doing my services. One may think like that. But then, it is important to develop these qualities, because when a person does not develop these Vaishnava qualities, like humility, tolerance, etc., then he may commit offenses to the devotees, and whatever steadiness one has, that will actually degrade to unsteadiness. So that is why it is important when we see other devotees, when we see others, like we have to look for the primary characteristics and then see how the person is advanced. But when we see ourselves, we should not see that I am steady in my primary practices, so I don't have to develop the secondary qualities. Because if we don't put attention to develop these Vaishnava qualities, then whatever steadiness we'll have, it will actually degrade. That's why if you read in the Bhagavad Gita 13th chapter, Krishna talks about the 18 points of knowledge. Out of that, the primary item is devotional service to Krishna. All the others are secondary items. But when Prabhupada gives the purport, when he talks about this primary item, he hardly summarizes in 2-3 sentences. But in regard to secondary items, he writes more elaborately. That means we understand that it is important to develop the secondary qualities, which are actually important in order to progress in devotional service. So I'm extremely sorry that actually I did not intend to go beyond the time, but please forgive me for that. I'll stop here. Sorry.
Thank you, Prabhu, for a very thought-provoking class with wonderful realizations from Sevasthan. Yeah. I think you have served in Sevasthan with real Seva attitude. Yeah. Therefore, so many realizations have come from secondary attitudes. I mean, secondary characteristics, you have taken some primary instructions. I just wanted one clarification when you said that steadiness in first is gross senses and then subtle senses and then the mind. I just a bit confused about what are the difference between subtle senses and the mind, because I thought mind is also a subtle sense.
Mind is the subtlest of all the senses, because but mind is the controller of mainly karmendriyas, gyanendriyas and mind. Like karmendriyas are like hands, legs, like those services which involve like physical activities, and then higher than that is like those devotional activities which involve the like subtle senses, like hearing, chanting. And then highest is like the mind, because says mind is the subtlest of all the senses. Like even when Rupa Goswami gives a definition of sadhana bhakti, he says that sadhana bhakti is performed with the senses. And then he says, but the essence of sadhana bhakti is to fix the mind on Krishna, because mind is the controller of all the senses. So the essence of sadhana bhakti is to fix the mind on Krishna. So consistency, steadiness in mind means like even in the mind, like for example, I remember one purport in the fifth canto when Lord Brahma tells to Priyavrata Maharaj that please hear my instruction with attention and without envy. So that means he's telling Priyavrata Maharaj, please hear my instruction with attention, but also hear without envy. That means you hear in a favorable mood, with the attitude of wanting to follow the instruction. Don't feel, sometimes a person may hear, but then the mind, we see like sometimes bad thoughts are going on. We may have some wrong thoughts, or we may be thinking of some faults of another person. So we may be, and the externally we may be hearing attentively. But then the mind, some wrong thoughts are going on. So means in the consistency in mind means in the mind also to think, to be always thinking of pleasing Krishna in the favorable mood, not having any wrong attitude. Because mind is the subtlest of all the senses. Sorry, I don't know. Actually, I don't have any realization, but only because of being the association of devotees like Radha Gopinathram and others, something came out.
I didn't realize even the way you describe about passing stool. Elaborated it. How that can also an activity of self-realization.
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.